It's in the poetry at the Word Cafe.
It's in the poetry. It's in the poetry.
Words plucked like fruit, then thrown away. Some may stay in lines spun like silk that tear and fray. Some may stay as stanzas slowly branch and grow to poems on the page, on the stage, today.
It's in the poetry. It's in the poetry. At the Word Cafe.
Ah, it is in the poetry. Hello, everyone out there in Totnes, Dartington land, and anyone else who's listening over on the internet. Thank you for tuning in to 102.5 FM Sound Art Radio. And this is the Word Cafe, as the song hailed. Thank you to Martin Seeger for that piece of music, the lyrics and music written by Martin. Thank you for that. And today we have, as usual, a bit of a jam-packed, a jammy show. So each week I ask the question, is poetry a load of bananas, or is it just the most beautiful inner muse? Or is it rock and roll or a donut? I don't know. I'm going to leave that for you to ponder upon in this time, which is 12 through to 1:30, with fabulous poetry guests and Tracy Gillies, who is going to be joining me shortly to talk a little bit about life, the universe, and probably some bananas. Now, I am broadcasting from home, just to put you in the picture. So anything could happen. I'm on technical alone here, so watch yourself. I've had a piece of Dundee cake, which I think was a very, very bad move. It's a bad move for a programme lasting 1 hour and a half. I should have had something sort of calming, like an avocado. Never mind. So I've had a piece of Dundee cake and a coffee. So Lord knows you're in the hands of a mad person. Today we have the lockdown podcasts. This is going to be so exciting. We've got Live Talk, Chris Redmond, and co-host Matt Harvey. Yes, it's true. So me and Trace will be talking about that. I think she listened to the programme last night or something like that. And a big wave to Patrick over there, who I know is locked up. He's incarcerated. So, yeah, we're going to have that. Then we've got Simon Williams. Yes, the one and only Simon Williams. The one, you know, Buckfast Leeway. So he's going to be on the book launch part of the programme. So very excited about that too. And as the programme rolls on, we should be getting contact with Tim Scott. Now, I don't know Tim, don't know him at all, but the lovely Judy Lee, writer, authoress, has recommended him from the group that she's part of. So big hooray to the Wellington Writers Group. You see, we're so cosmopolitan, do you know what I mean? Then we're going to try and squeeze a little pod that Robert Garnham, the professor of whimsy, has created. We'll do that. We'll do our best. And then, guess what? We've got the Bard of Northampton. More about her soon. Let's have a little bit of something that Tracy actually said will get us in the mood for the podcast. Yes. It's a little bit of Del Amitri.
Turn off typewriters and put on their coats. And janitors padlock the gates for security guards to patrol. And bachelors phone up their friends for a drink while the married ones turn on a chat show. And they'll all be lonely tonight and lonely tomorrow. Gentlemen, time please, you know we can't serve anymore. Now the traffic lights change to stop when there's nothing to go. And by 5 o'clock everything's dead, and every third car is a cab, and ignorant people sleep in their beds like the dope white mice in the college lab. And nothing ever happens, nothing happens at all. The needle returns to the start of the song, and we all sing along like before. And we'll all be lonely tonight and lonely tomorrow. Telephone exchanges click while there's nobody's there. The Martians could land in the car park and no one would care. Closed-circuit cameras and department stores shoot the same movie every day. And the stars of these films neither die nor get killed, just survive constant action replay. And nothing ever happens, nothing happens at all. The needle returns to the start of the song, and we all sing along like before. And we'll all be lonely tonight and lonely tomorrow.
So this is the point we get Trace, our Tracy, on the line. She's just round the corner from me. She could be sitting on my knee, really. Although, I don't know how heavy she is. I won't. I'll ask Patrick. Patrick.
Hello.
We're playing your song, Gail.
Oh, you were playing my song, Gail? Yes,
we are. Nothing Ever Happens by Del Amitri. Now, you told me that that put you in the mood because one of Liv's poems, tell us a little bit about, well, don't obviously blow it.
Oh, I won't give too much away because you guys are going to be listening to it in a short while. No, I was listening to that episode last night just to remind myself because it was quite a long time ago we sort of recorded them.
Yeah.
And it was one of the lines from Liv's poem, can I say it? Soggy Twats is the name of her poem. And one of the lines was, the green flag man who earns less in a year than Mr. Mercedes earns in a month. And it just shows you how poetry can be quite transformative, because it literally transported me to the lyrics of a Del Amitri song.
Yay.
Which is really poignant is the word. And the lyrics were, while American businessmen snap up Van Goghs at the price of a hospital wing. And I thought those two lines really resonated with each other. So I thought maybe you'd play that for me this morning.
Well,
and you did.
I did. Of course I did. Your wish is my command. And, you know, thank you, Tracy, because when I phone you, I get really centred. Prior to phoning you, I'm like, I've had a piece of cake. I'm mad as a hatter. But so now I'm feeling like, now calm down, Julie. So just to remind everybody out there, so the lockdown podcasts made by the Barrel House and the Word Cafe came from the purse of the Arts Council, but you put this in motion. You appeared at my front door one day back then and said, listen, we want you to do a project. And it was one the most exciting thing, because I was completely in lockdown and sort of hiding because of asthma and etc. And you just made my day, my year. And then what was brilliant was connecting with 14 poets across the United Kingdom, completely fabulous poets, and Mr. Matt Harvey, our local hero, being the co-host. It was all just like treacle, basically. Fabulous.
It was wonderful.
Toffee.
It was knocking on your door that day was like being Father Christmas. even though I was delivering a present that Sarah Trigg had actually managed to secure. She was the one that managed to do all the hard work in securing the Arts Council funding. So that was a brilliant day, and just to see your lovely face that day as well, because I hadn't seen you for so long.
I know, it's been a troubled time, hasn't it? But I think slowly but surely we're all getting back at it, aren't we?
Oh, we are indeed. And I know at that time us lovies like to do a lot of air kissing anyway. But during lockdown, it was all air kissing and no real hugs and kisses. So hopefully we'll gradually get back to being able to be tactile with each other again.
Exactly. So any second now, I'm going to play the lockdown podcast, which is with Liv Talk, Chris Redmond and Matt Harvey. And I just want to say thank you, you know, to the Barrel House, to you, and obviously to Sarah for just incredible kindness and support throughout all of this. So Mercy Buckets.
I don't think you realise, though. I don't think people out there really realise how important poetry and so many of the other creative art forms are. It can never be overstated. It really can't.
That is true.
You know, we need it in our lives. Can I just plug a couple of poetry
Please
gigs that are going to be happening in the coming
Please
months?
Please do.
Well, apart from the one that we've got with Pete the Temp doing his one-man show From Homer to Hip Hop on the 4th of May, which is sort of a journey through poetic movements that have shaped history, I just noticed online last night that St Mary's Church on the 8th of April, they've got the wonderful Ted Hughes award-winning poet Holly McNish appearing.
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
Didn't even know. Yeah.
The wonderful Lem Cissé described her as Pam Ayres on acid. She's absolutely wonderful. So that's Friday the 8th of April. I think Cabaret Voltaire presented that, St Mary's. So go and get a dose of poetry.
Oh, my God. Definitely. Thank you for flagging that up. Tracy, thanks for coming on the programme. Loads
love
of love.
Loads, lovely lady.
I loved you too. Bye.
Bye.
So that was our Tracy. Now, I had no idea about that. She is in the know. Okay, it's time, everyone. Lockdown, poetry. Matt Harvey, you ready, love? He is, you know. Oh, well, he's sort of ready.
Hello, and welcome to the Barrel House Podcasts, supported by a bit of dosh from the Arts Council Purse, a series of 7 jolly podcasts made with love, tenderness, and Matt Harvey. They are especially going out to our audiences who miss the Word Cafe, which used to happen once a month upstairs at the Barrel House, Totnes. Over to you, gang.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Julie. It's nice to be here. Twinned with love and tenderness. Basically, we've got Liv Talk and Chris Redmond with us today. I want to say right at the top of this podcast that we gave them some themes, not knowing if they'll respond to them. And that, just so you know, the themes that we offered gently and tenderly to them were danger and distances, isolation and intimacy, lockdown and letdowns, arguments and activism, wolves and worrying, loneliness and long distance running, vegetables, vengeance and deep volcanoes. So quite a lot of theme going on there. Most poems probably could be tied to one or other of those things. Trouble taken over alliteration, as you'll have noticed. Before we introduce our poets, rather, I'm going to do a warm-up poem, and it is a very rarely performed poem called Rudolf Nureyev's Ballet Shoe, chosen because so many of us in the arts were encouraged to retrain inside a controversial picture of a ballerina whose career we were led to believe had just been ended. So this was inspired by someone who hassled Rudolf Nureyev outside the stage door for performance after performance after performance until he finally gave them a shoe to take away. And I'm just considering that shoe. This ballet shoe that bore his weight now bears his signature, a date, now holds his memory and his shape. This is the ballet shoe that knows the flexing of Nureyev's toes, the shoe that he stepped in and leapt, landing lightly, that stood strong on demi-point, trembling slightly, nightly, most likely. How could such a shoe forget the knowledge absorbed with his sweat, the memory of each pirouette, of grand battement à la seconde, that danced in demi-monde de jambe with attitude and with aplomb? He'd hoist a ballerina skyward, making human form ethereal, as if she were made of plywood or some other light material. Who could not but be inspired by this ballet shoe so long retired, even this shoe so long asleep, behold within it one last leap? Who wouldn't step out from their desk and try for one last arabesque, to leap, to fly, to hit the deck, to sit and write this poem with a really sore neck?
Hey.
There you go.
Tinkle, tinkle.
So that was my little ballet shoe poem.
Loved it.
Stand, very rarely performed.
All right, so Chris Redmond, this is him. He is a writer, performer and musician. He has performed on BBC Radio 1, Radio 4, Sky Arts, and BBC Scotland's Culture Show. A spoken word poet and frontman of Tung Fu, one of the UK's leading spoken word shows. His first collection with Burning Eye is called Let the Pig Out. Topics explored with a playful heart are fox racing, fatherhood, rainbows and roadkill. Let the Pig Out is a note to self and or a call to arms to embrace life in all its mess and discord with a wild sense of curiosity and wonder. That's you.
Wow.
That's you, Chris Redmond.
Oh, gosh. I'm not sure what I can do with that. I'll do my best. So the first one I'm going to do is Short Live. So you've got 8 lines to prepare your response. This, I'm going to say, it comes under either the theme of distances or lockdown, because it was written in the summer in lockdown, following a brief conversation with one of my daughters. This is called Ants. Poppy says she can smell the ants. A column marches the wall by the back door. Only when they're together, she says, sailing her 7-year-old nose inches from their choreography. She whispers, they smell of courgettes.
We love that.
Who'd have thought? Who'd have thought that ants smell of courgettes, but a 7-year-old nose is finely tuned?
Yay! Yeah.
This is esoteric stuff. Thank you. And do you know what, Liv?
Hello.
You've got a little bit more time to respond, okay? Because I want to formally introduce you.
Okay.
I don't want to be like reading loads of poems and then, oh, by the way, this is what Liv's about. You know, I want to formally introduce you, if that's okay, and then let you loose. So. There's so much I could say about Liv Talk. I'm going to start with your own words, Liv. Liv Talk is a razor blade skating performance poet who plunges the vast caverns and dormant volcanoes of the human condition. I mean, that's true. That's true, Liv. You said it, but I endorse it. Radio Exeter, current co-host of the Hip Yak Poetry Shack, runs the poetry web stage at WOMAD and the Hip Yak Poetry School. First published book, Show Me Life, released by Burning Eye in 2015. These are my words now. Instigator, curator, animateur of the amazing High Flew Artstroke Poetry Films, soon to be a one-woman collaborative show, we hope. How can it be a one-woman collaborative show? Find out. We've talked about this. Went viral with The Human Emergency, the climate change of the face of motherhood poem. Most recently, a siren poet with Project Kate Farewell. If there's anything I've left out, I'm sorry. Back in the day, co-founder with me and Beryl the Feral of the Wondermentalist Cabaret. Here, Liv Talk is going to now do poetry.
Oh, thanks, Matt. I just think it's probably because I have a multiple personality disorder that I can put with myself. So before this, I went through some poems and I labelled them with all the different themes in the hope that it would make things quicker for me. This is a really small one. It's not very jolly, but it's on the theme of danger to go with versus distances. And it's called Hard to Swallow. Last night, I ate some hate, scrolling through toxic rivers of debate. It's sitting like a tabloid in my throat. Feels like my love for England might be broke. We are a jumbled union jacked on blame, phobic, sceptic, populist disdain, bile now as much a part of us as rain.
Ooh.
that's on the danger of obviously, the wonderful world of social media and Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you put me in touch with pain I've forgotten my name. So.
That's what I'm here for. Well, this is on the theme of worrying, shall we say, then. It could be worrying or distances. So, and it's called School Shirt Blues. And it's about, sort of worrying about your kids, I guess. I found myself blubbing as I did up the buttons on his school shirt. Big fat tears that come when your last kid, the little stroppy one, who still screams your name in the night and clings to you like a monkey on their favourite banana tree, smiles at you proudly over a starchy collar. And you look back into their ocean acorn eyes, air filling your lungs in a whoosh, and you are falling through time. A blur of nappies and car seats, tantrums, 4 a.m. bedwetting, washing, bleeding, breastfeeding, endless kneading. It all piles up behind your lashes like storm surge, water and detritus, oxytocin and we. While the bigness of what is still to come, all the things you can't control spiral in on you, past and future colliding in a tiny plastic button. My mum said she's taken the stair gate down in the conservatory. End of an era. They aren't babies anymore. Thank God, I said. Of course, I loved those years. They've saved me, taught me what it means to howl human, what the body and spirit is capable of, sleep deprivation, egg mayonnaise sandwiches, what love can make bearable. And I hated those years too. They've bulldozed everything, monopolised all my loving, broken me, aged me, pulled my demons to my lips, pushed me to the edges of myself. My cousin said the main difference between parents and non-parents is that the latter still believe they're good people. And yet his skin is so soft. His eyes sparkle like stars in a jam jar. And his first pair of school shoes make dinosaur prints in the rain.
I love you, Liv Talk.
Oh, I love you too, Julie.
That was amazing, that poem. Absolutely brought me to my emotional knees. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Wow. I'm going to just cheapen things now, if that's all right. This sort of vaguely fits in with all of the themes. Okay, so one of my favorite radio DJs is Sean Keaveney on Six Music, because I think he's got like the best combination of excellent music and really daft banter, and that appeals to me. And I met him a couple of times in quick succession, both by accident, both really unexpectedly, and then I began to wonder if, you know, there was something more to it. This was written in a cafe in Froome. Sean Keaveney is on the radio here. Sean Keaveney came to our kids' show. Sean Keaveney is mates with Sarah. Sean Keaveney lost his phone at Camp Bestival. Sean Keaveney was grateful when I found his phone. Make friends with Sean Keaveney. Or stalk him. Pretend these coincidences are as meaningful to him as they are to me. Send Sean Keaveney a message. Tell him you like his show. Enjoy his banter. Suggest we should go for a pint sometime or go swimming. I bet he likes swimming. Send Sean another message asking him why he hasn't replied. Tell him I understand he's probably busy, but that time at Camp Bestival at the Helter Skelter when he dropped to his knees in a show of thanks, well, it felt like the beginning. Like he could be Thelma to my Louise. I can't remember if that makes me Susan Sarandon or Gina Davis. And I always fancied Brad Pitt in that film. Anyway, tell Sean that he probably fancied Brad too. Ask Sarah for Sean's number because emails are clearly not getting through. There's bound to be a filter. I mean, this is important. Fate is a convincing conjurer, playing with our lives, throwing us together again at the South Bank, like brand new long lost friends, like, whoa, it's you and me. Wow. My Speedos and towel are ready. I always have a pound in my swimming bag for the locker. Text Sean, tell him, if not swimming, what about paintballing? And after, the pub, and we could talk about playlists and how we both sway between reverence and irreverence and how you can't measure Prince against Morrissey and how he's the only breakfast DJ I want to listen to while sipping my flat white, sitting on an upcycled school desk on a concrete floor in a red brick cafe, writing stalker poems instead of writing a funding application for something meaningful that I want to perform at the South Bank. Invite Sean to the South Bank. He likes it there. We like it there. Text Sean. Again. In full caps, like, hi, Sean, me again, but no worries. I'm busy too. Funding applications don't write themselves. That thing about swimming? Sorry, too busy now. Okay, I admit it. I'm hurting a bit. I feel like you're taking a mick. I mean, I took your phone home. I charged it. I texted your mate. I arranged to meet. I could have robbed it, Sean, but maybe that's the difference between us. I always give too much. Well, thanks for teaching me that again, Sean. Oh, and the South Bank thing, forget it. The guest list is pretty much full already. My mum and dad said they were coming unless dad's eye appointment is that day. I mean, you can't plan around that stuff. Got to go. Could have been beautiful, Sean. We'll move on. Time heals. I'll keep your number, though, just in case it doesn't.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Oh, yeah.
That was hysterical.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks.
We've got to get our list of celebrity subscribers together.
What you got, Liv? Go on. Send me back.
I don't know what I'm responding to anymore, but I guess
whatever you like.
Whatever. So this could be vengeance or letdowns. I wrote this one last year. It feels appropriate considering the weather at the moment. It's called Soggy Twats. I realise that's really inappropriate. And it happened due to me breaking down and being stuck waiting for a recovery for about 5 hours because my windscreen wipers are broken. So this is in response to that. The breakdown man said he had to pull a 50k Mercedes out of the flood yesterday. They just drive into it, expecting it to part like the Red Sea, Bluetooth glinting off the storm surge, pink and mute in cufflinks, an entitled Icarus with waxed wing mirrors, scoffing at the locusts in Africa, the burning bush kangaroos in Australia, as if nature was something that happened to other people. The UK now a polluted pond of bewilderment full of fat frogs who should have seen it coming. I don't like to tell people bad news, but his car was a write-off, he said. Grim satisfaction and compassion warbled with his top lip. He had just loaded my Clio onto the back of his van. My wipers scraped across the screen like petrified eyebrows. They just gave up in the storm, dragging their heels across my vision until everything was spots and streams and frothing glass, like the future was not worth seeing. I sat up front and stared out the window. He had jazz on low. Water pooled excitedly along the roadside, a billion expectant royalists waiting for the Queen's tsunami, a torrential ticker tape parade. He wanted me to hook him up, tow him back to the garage, he said, but it was over his bonnet and I'm only on minimum wage and I'm not getting up to my knackers in that just because this guy's a... He didn't say twat, he was too professional, but we both thought it. I imagined the three-pointed star on the nose of his car winking like a 50p in a puddle, an emblem which once stood for world domination, no better than the flag on the Titanic. It's not going to be a peaceful rebellion, is it? We aren't going to fade into the end of days but sink into soggy despair, a perpetual camping holiday from the 1980s, forever trying to do a three-point turn in a cul-de-sac with a trailer tent in the rain. Miserable, wet, eating cold tomato soup around burning oil cans, relying on the kindness of neighbours and the green flag man who earns less in a year than Mr. Mercedes earns in a month. It's the people on the ground in the waders who are going to have to save us over and over and over again. His engine must have flooded, the electrics poached, the brown water lapping the cream leather interior, reclaiming the carcass of consumerism. When he opened the driver's door, the wave knocked him over. I am still a god, he thought, as he sat waist deep in cow diarrhea.
That's pretty satisfying.
That's why it's my good revenge poem.
Yeah, entitled Icarus. Yeah, that's really satisfying. Mm.
My pleasure to bring that back in this wet weather. All these poems were sort of pre-coronavirus. I couldn't find, any really jolly ones from the last year. Sorry, Julie.
Oh, don't worry. I love your poem.
Whatever means you're using, you're both taking us to jolly places.
You are.
Yeah. Chris, are you up for a response?
This is a poem it really does. I wasn't going to do this one, but listening to Liv's, I thought, yeah, there's something in that. You know, I love that line about what's the line about the people who are going to save us?
The people on the ground in the waders are the ones who are going to
save us. Yeah, I had this conversation recently with someone about the kind of the want to be a hero and the strength of the hero narrative and how we center ourselves in the middle of every situation and how problematic that is. And perhaps if we shift our perspective, then we might actually be able to do a little bit better. So this is a piece called Starlings. Imagine a murmuration of starlings, 10,000 birds, folding and flowering, sky calligraphers, bending evenings into pointless patterns of their impulse, speckle-winged flames churning the air. Now, imagine those starlings in competition, all attempting to outspin, outmaneuver each other, bent on accolade and achievement. The sky would be mud. They don't question the system that nurtures their flocking instincts. Perhaps they just know there is uplift when their wings beat synchronous. When we, the smart mammals, ground dwellers with bank accounts and ambitions, watch the starlings, we are wonder eyes, chests swell with awe breathing. Can we not learn? Must we exist as the antithesis to starlings? How we raise ourselves to believe success is a synonym for winning. Every child learns this over and over with each book, film, or song. The I becomes blind to the we, the us too defined by the them, until even the noblest of intentions can flounder into blame and bluster if the impulse is to be heroic. Let's take off our capes for a moment and our shiny pants, put our weapons and our lead role ambitions down and listen. A musician doesn't compete to outperform another. They learn from each other to fill the world with more music. Can success be synonymous with service? Can how can I win transform to how can I help? How do we want to fly? Like Superman, trying to spin the earth backwards with his own stubborn will? Or like the starlings, following each other's lead, lifting each other up?
Can we hang out with you?
Yeah!
That was absolutely wonderful. Chris Redmond, Liv Talk, you have both been uplifting and beautiful, and I love you, and we both love you, don't we, Harvey?
You are very beautiful starlings.
Oh, you are, and thank you for being part of this.
It's been wonderful to flock with you.
It has. I've been
admiration with you. Really lovely. Thank you for having us.
It's been
gorgeous.
Yeah, thank you. All the best. Bye.
Liv Talk, Chris Redmond, Matt Harvey in their absolute element. That was just, well, that was food, wasn't it? Absolutely food. Oh, so much food, I'm playing it all again. It really was, and I just want to flag up that series editor was Billy Elliot, and the music, this by Wax Machine. So Billy did a fab job, and she came on the programme last week to talk about editing, as did Sarah Trigg come on the programme to talk about the whole sort of project. Oh, wow, that really was. I needn't have bothered with that slice of Dundee cake. I've just had a complete six-course meal with those poets. I hope you enjoyed them as well. It is 102.5 FM Sound Art Radio. I'm Julie Mullen on the Word Cafe. Hope to be with you for an hour and a half. It's all down to the woofers and tweeters. And to come, we have Simon Williams on book launch, and we have Tim Scott coming in on the programme on the top of the hour at 1 o'clock. And the bard of Northampton, yes, Kezabel. It's true, Kezabel Ambler, she's coming on. So we're just going to party, aren't we, online. A big thumbs up to Sound Art. Hello, Chris. Hello, Lucinda. Thanks for making this all possible. Let's take a bit of music to pause, and then I shall introduce you to Simon. Little bit of Claude Debussy whilst I get the bit of info up. about Simon. So Simon Williams is a local poet here in Devon. And let's just put this a little bit lower. Okay. So let me just catch you up on Simon Williams. He has been writing since his teens, when he was mentored at university by Roger McGough and Pete Morgan. His first collection was published in 1981. Since then, he's had 8 further collections, his latest being The Magpie Almanac, and that's from Voil, published December 2020. Simon was elected the Bard of Exeter in 2013 and founded the large format magazine The Broadsheet and co-published The Play Anthology in memory of his young grandson in 2018. 2 years ago, he developed a one-man poetry show called Cosmic Latte, centred on astronomy, animals, and subatomic particles. One day, he hopes to be able to perform it. We'll get Simon on the phone shortly. Let's just have a little bit more of this music. Right, okay, let's give Simon a call now. There we are, we've got him on the blower. So that's technical. One of the pads has just flown off my headset. Is it Friday the 13th or what's going on?
Quite, no.
Simon, thank you so much for agreeing to come to the Word Cafe on 102.5 FM. To save a little bit of time, well, I've done the intro, so I'm just going to say, pretending we're at the Barrel House in Totnes with those fantastic red velvet curtains as a backdrop, there's the microphone. Over to you.
I'm delighted to have been invited into this book launch slot by Julie, but I feel a little bit of a cheat since the book came out in December of 2020. But unfortunately, because of lockdown and because of people's understandable reluctance to go into closed venues for a face-to-face book launch, this is the first time I've really had a chance to read a selection from it. The book's called The Magpie Almanac, and the reason that it has that title is because when I was putting the manuscript together, I couldn't find any single theme that the poems were about, and so I decided to do a sort of miscellany of different subjects. And another word for miscellany is almanac, so the magpie being a bird that likes to pick interesting bits and pieces and take them back to its nest. So it's divided into several sections, and I'm going to read a couple of poems from several of the sections. The first one comes from the About the Author section, which is sort of autobiographical. And this goes back to when I was about 18, 19, and myself and my girlfriend at the time went to visit her French pen friend and stay with the family for a week. And she had a younger sister called Chantal, And she, well, I won't tell you anymore, otherwise it'll detract from the poem. But it's called Unreliable Translation. Chantal collects swear words as a module of her course in early teen rebellion. Others include questioning mass, a Walkman full of protest songs, sometimes not making her bed. When we arrive, neat and English from London, on an exchange, she wants to add to her collection. "What in English?" she asks, pointing to her blue-jeaned bum. "We're guests in her parents' house." "We call that wheelbarrow." I have to write it down for her. She looks a bit suspicious. "And what's the worst thing you call someone?" We glance at each other, say in semi-whisper, "District nurse." Earlier on from that, my mum, when I suppose I was 9, 10, something like that, revealed that she'd had twins before I was born. I always thought I was the eldest in the family, but they hadn't survived. They only survived a few days. And when I was reading a poem by Seamus Heaney about the death of his brother at the age of 4, it reminded me of this. The quote from Heaney's poem inspired it. And that quote is, "A 4-foot box, a foot for every year." So this is naming them. Nicholas and Alexander, because she read Dr. Zhivago, along with Valley of the Dolls and Peyton Place. Elizabeth and Robert. She would quote them on occasion and was fond of King Charles Spaniels. Abelard and Eloise would be too la-di-da intellectual, a sight too French, and monks and nuns. Jack and Jill, perhaps, because the names had yet to be firmed up, too soon for a visit to the registry. Perhaps she asked her sisters or her brothers for suggestions, or had scoured a small red book of names. Whatever she may have called them, they were the twins through all the time I knew her, came and went 2 years before my birth. I never caught her crying over photos with a glass of wine. By Heaney's measure, they would have fitted in a case of Riesling in no time. The next section is people and animals. And you'll notice as we go through that there are some slightly unlikely juxtapositions. This is because I originally had a lot more section headings, and my editor said, no, you can't have as many as that. You know, we're going to have to cut it back down. So this is a slightly interesting one. It's about a physicist called Niels Bohr, who is a Dane. And he had a long argument with Albert Einstein about the nature of subatomic particles. And he and Niels Bohr won the Nobel Prize for it. And then he also won another prize, which is what this poem's about. It's called Probably the Best Free House in the World. After Niels Bohr had done his best work, predicted the energy states of electrons, shaken the hands of the Nobel judges, he was given a house by Carlsberg, next to the brewery. Long before Peter Armbruster named Borium, Dr. Bohr knew the radius of an atom, was happy with wave-particle duality, had his own beer tap, his own free beer. Perhaps it was at the end of a physics all-nighter, with mates drinking from tall glasses, talking of the condensation of water and its molecules. He said, "Your theory is crazy, but not crazy enough to be true." Coming much more up to date and much more into my own experience, this is a poem about a guy I saw in St. Ives. My wife and I have spent a lot of time in Hale and St. Ives in the west of Cornwall, and this guy was sitting on the harbour wall one day. It's called The Sitar Player. All sitar players are Ravi Shankar or George Harrison. Until today, when, on the harbour wall, a bearded man with an Aussie hat sat on one leg, straightened the other, and played riffs or ragas, who knows which, as though they'd surfed in through his fingers. All the while, in the hot September sun, I know, but it was, his falcon stood on its small pedestal and spread its wings. In between pieces, he sprayed the bird with an atomizer, so drops of water shined on its feathers as it cooled. While his fingers rode the fretboard, the bird spread its wings again, as if his notes were squirming at its feet, silver fish piled on the key. Moving on to places and space, as you can see, they can be quite local spaces, or they can be the whole of space, really. This one is a very local thing. It's called Repairing the Roof, and we live on the edge of Dartmoor. Two things you should know. On Dartmoor, we make do and mend. Don't spend when we can bodge it. And that she and I are poets. So when the waved asbestos roof above our kitchen leaked in the rain and drops fell on the floor in the torrential showers of March, we found a plastic document wallet, slid it between two of the corrugated panels, and called it near enough. The rain slid down towards the gutter. A year on, and the drips are back, reflection of the steady grey that sweeps up from the lizard. In the attic, our repair has come adrift. We replace the plastic wallet with a cherry red one. Notice that the old, bedraggled patch is half eaten by snails. The postman says they had to put a draft excluder in the village postbox to stop the snails eating stamps off mailed letters. Our cobbled roof repair looks delicious. And going much, much further out to the size of the Milky Way, this is a poem about the Milky Way and plumbing. A plug hole with the suds rotating, speeding as they reach the centre, pop into oblivion. Oblivion escapes observation, light hidden through our black hole's guile. Perhaps drainage is involved. Each comet, asteroid, planet, sun plops around the U-bend, flows out under space-time's roadway. If every galaxy is as well plumbed as this one, somewhere in the backwaters of the universe, the spray arms of the biggest effluent treatment system have circled since the bang. The Poetry, Art and Politics section covers a wide variety of different bits and pieces, including this protest poem, which is about sea plastics and all the things we shouldn't be dumping in the oceans. It's called Things That Slip Through Baleen. Krill, of course, minute shrimps and plankton, fry by the shoalful, small crustaceans. Microbeads from body scrubs, toothpaste, facial washes, flushed into drains, rivers, out through estuaries. The polythene straps from four packs. PVC shrink wrap, strips from polyethylene carrier bags. Fishing line, lures, floats, the bits of nets that break in the struggle, in their squares and hexagons. Parts of cars, specifically an engine cover, which might have been swallowed by a sperm whale rather than sucked into the stomach of a baleen whale, but must we split hairs? Yogurt pots, express coffee lids, snack bar wrappers, the sole of a shoe. The parts of us we're finished with, nail clippings, cut hair, hard skin from our heels, polyps from our tongues. It's like my body, piece by piece, and all the pieces of all the bodies of all the people who eat. We don't mean to, We don't want to fill whales' stomachs, to filter through their combs, to hamper their digestion, to stop them living. But we are. We do. We slip another fragment through. We like things clean, hermetically sealed, to slit as we open to see the contents. The contents. Like we took the blubber and the oil, now we're giving up replacements, filling their body parts with longer-lasting food, with bottles from our water. Tears everywhere. Towards the back of the book, the last section is called Surreal and Dada. So it's not so much about the subject of the poems, but the way they're structured. This poem includes urinals and farting, but they're both in context, so I hope I get away with it. It's called Gents. Standing at the urinals, the stranger next to me farted and apologised profusely. Aiming to ease his embarrassment, I said, "If you can't loose one here, where can you?" "Among the dunes, 3 kilometres north of Mazuga," he replied, after some consideration. "Deep in the Amazon rainforest," came a voice from the first cubicle, "just west of Manaus, in a dugout." "Was that you?" said a bloke from the second stall. "There was no good fishing there for weeks." "On the ice floes of Antarctica," said the washroom attendant, "in the middle of the long, long night." "In a spacesuit," called Jim Lovell, having a shower in the room reserved for truckers. "Completely self-contained, and you're the only one to ever know." And finally, this is a poem that's a little bit like, or the structure is a little bit like, some of Craig Raine's Martian poems, where he took the idea of a Martian describing things in our modern world that he knew nothing about because he was a stranger in a strange world, if you like. This one's a similar sort of idea, only I've called it "An Alien Archaeologist Propounds a Theory." "It's the way their teeth worked. They spent considerable effort on dentistry, replaced or filled damaged molars and premolars with metals, various epoxies. And yet, unlike their short familiars with the long muzzles and exclusive meat diet, the humans' cuspids served no clear purpose. Gentle beings, it's a conundrum. The only theory which holds up so far, though more research is needed, is that these sharp cutting teeth were used for bisecting squares of 70% dark chocolate. Lint, mostly. Thank you. It's been a pleasure."
Thank you so much, Simon Williams. I love your collection. I love that kind of sense of, you know, it feels like it's has everything, so many different elements in the book. Now, if people want to pursue buying the book, tell me how they would do this.
Yes, they should go to my website.
Yeah.
And the website is quite simple. It's www, obviously, simonwilliams.info, I-N-F-O. And that should take you straight to the landing page. And when you click through from that, you come to the page which will sell you the book.
Fantastic.
So fairly straightforward.
Very straightforward.
And it's £10 including all carriage and postage.
Thank you so much for being part of the book launch today, Simon. And I hope to see your one-man show, Cosmic Latte.
Yes.
When's that coming?
I hope to be able to perform it. We'll have to see how things go.
Exactly.
I'm going to go back through it and update it a bit and practice it so that I can hopefully come out and do it somewhere.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, and look forward to bumping into you in Totnes one of these fine days.
Absolutely.
All right, all the best.
I'll ring you next time I'm in having a coffee. Somewhere.
Yes, please do. Take care. Bye-bye,
yeah,
Simon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. That was Simon Williams. So I'm going with one strange ear, basically. So I've got a pad one side on my headphones and the other one's flown off. So you see, this is what happens when you're doing technical all alone. On the hour at one, we've got poet Tim Scott, who will be calling. And it's going to be exciting. We're going to try and squeeze in Robert Garnham. Let's have a bit of music. We need music. Ooh, are you there? I don't think he is. Come on, music. Here he comes. This is Tom O'Dell.
Somewhere, you know I care, but it's so cold and I don't know where. I brought you daffodils on a pretty string, but they won't flower like they did last spring. And I wanna kiss you, make you feel alright. I'm just so tired to share my nights. I wanna cry and I wanna love, but all my tears have been used up on another love, all my tears have been used up on another love, all my tears have been used all on another love, oh, my tears have been used all.
Right then, let's get ready for more poetry. That was Tom O'Dell and Another Love. And just to kind of wind it back a bit, I was playing my own version of the Lockdown podcast, but you can, if you're part of Spotify, you can go out there and click on to the Word Cafe and the Lockdown podcasts and listen to them all over again. And indeed, if you want to hear the show, Simon Williams and all the other poets that are on today, you can go to Podbean, where the Word Cafe lives. So if you've just tuned in, it's 102.5 FM. I'm Julie Mullen with the Word Cafe, poetry and a bit of music. We're going to be swimming all the way to Tim Scott in a minute. So I did pose a question, you know, a couple of weeks ago when we started, is poetry soporific for you, or is it actually gives you superpowers? That was the question for the first couple of weeks. And I'm thinking superpowers, aren't you? I felt very powered up after Liv and Chris and Matt and Simon and everyone. Let's call Tim. Aha. Right then. Thank you, Tom O'Dell. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. We have connection. Fantastic. I had a bit of trouble with Simon Williams getting connected, if he will live on the moor. But we've got you. So, Tim, where are you located, please? Hello. Uh-oh. I should have spoken too soon. Hello. Ah. Oh, for some reason. There's some reason. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you perfectly. Hi.
Great. Okay. Welcome to the Word Cafe, Tim.
Well, thank you very much.
Where are you located?
Well, I live on the Quantock Hills in a little village called West Bagborough.
Yeah.
So it's a lovely part of the world to live in.
Fantastic. Now, tell me a little bit about this writing group that you're part of.
Oh, right. Well, I belong to two writing groups. One, I've been going to for a very long time, but more recently I've joined a group called the Solitary Writers. And I think you probably got to hear about me through Judy Lee, who is a friend of the programmes, and she's one of the members of the group, and we all meet in the Quaker Hall in Wellington, which is a lovely atmospheric place in which to sort of share poems and all sorts of different forms of writing.
A big thumbs up and hello to your group. And so shall we actually hear some poetry, Tim?
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay. We were talking about the sort of local area, just to begin with. So this one's called Fall Into Winter. It's a very beautiful area we live in, but it's not without its dangers.
Mm-hmm.
Fall Into Winter. At the turn of the year, the paths are rain-slick as I set off across fields with the dog. She is old and plants each step deliberately. I, feeling spry, take less care, but then a sudden flash of sky as my feet fly from under me, landing on my back with a squidgy quack, a pratfall, if ever there was one. I quickly assess any injuries. None, unless it's my pride and a newly muddied jacket. Did anyone see me? Knees above head? No. Dignity intact, then. And the dogs too polite to make fun of my flight.
Typical of a tactful dog. Brilliant. Yeah, thank you.
A lovely dog we had who died just shortly before lockdown.
Oh, dear.
So that was possibly the last walk we went on together. But she was super.
I bet.
Yep. We've now got a puppy, so if you hear any howling in the background, might be the puppy.
Yes, well, you've got your work cut out. We have four dogs, so I'm afraid we are kindred spirits.
We are indeed.
What other poetry have you got up your sleeve then?
Right, okay. This one's called Station Announcement, and it's about a friend who's going through a bit of a bad time, and I remember that the first time we'd met was on a railway station going towards Hull, and we heard the most beautiful female station announcement. She had a lovely voice, but places that she was listening sounded very unpromising. Anyway, he was going through a bad patch. He talked about feeling as if he was in Grumpy Central, and I suppose those two things came together to bring about this poem, Station Announcement. The pain now approaching Grumpy Central is the slow dawning service to forlorn, calling it whinge, crotchety, glum, prickly, peevish, relationship hall, black dog, and dull. Passengers are reminded to mind the gap between expectations and reality. For your comfort and security, this station has a strict no spontaneity policy. The train for Blythe via Chipper, Pollyanna, and Perky has been delayed. We apologise for the late running of this service, which is due to signal failure at upbringing. Stand well clear of the platform edge and remember to take all items of emotional baggage with you.
Nice one. I've got a bag actually that says emotional baggage, which is very handy for starting conversations, but not obviously in the pandemic. Well done for those poems. They were really fun. Thank you for that. And
thank you.
I know that you, it's not just poetry you concentrate on in terms of your writing. You've written monologues. So maybe just tell us a little bit, people out there listening to this programme, how you, what was your way into the monologues?
Oh, gosh. Well, I suppose I started writing to begin with when I was teaching and, you know, putting on plays, and found that actually there weren't very many plays with a decent number of speaking parts.
Yeah.
So, I started writing plays and so for the children and students, and you know, I enjoyed that a lot. But, you know, I'm not teaching at the moment, and I started writing monologues instead, you know, sort of talking heads type monologues, which, you know, I've enjoyed a lot. And, they sort of somehow chime in, I think, with the fact that we've been in a pandemic as well. You know, when one is rather on your own, sometimes talking to yourself as well.
Absolutely.
I enjoy writing.
That's great. Perhaps future programmes that I might make, the group will come on and we can have a soupçon of your monologues. Should we have one more final poem for the road?
Sure. Okay. Let's try and end with a bit of an optimistic note, because you know, we're living in difficult times, and I wrote this poem back in May 2016 when, again, there didn't seem to be an awful lot of good news around.
No.
And I think it was all Brexit swirling around the atmosphere as well, and things like that. And anyway, every so often, you know, when the news is not looking good, I sort of turn back to this poem, which is called Good News. Of course, there is often good news. When cures are discovered and fair compromises are achieved by well-meaning men and women, when plots are foiled and dogs have their day, usually you are able to catch the waiter's eye, the bus, and the last train home. And there are days for spending on the beach or in someone's arms. Even in Daily Mail misery land, a refugee makes good. England win a test match. Money is raised for noble causes, and a joke is shared. Yes, you may not live the life of Riley or get away scot-free, but there often is good news.
Thank you so much. That was a fantastic, perfect poem to end with, Tim Scott. It's been great talking with you, and thank you so much for the poetry contribution. Really enjoyed that. And I'll fix a time with Judy Lee and your group to come on and show us your wares, as they say in Liverpool.
Well, it's a fantastic group, and there's such a range of writing and a tremendous talent within it. So, yeah, I'm sure you'd be very welcome.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming on the programme.
Right. Thank you.
Take care now, Tim.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Right. Bye.
Thank you to Tim Scott, and thanks to Judy Lee for putting me in contact with one of the writers from your group. So we're going to try our best to, get Mr. Robert Garnham squeezed in here, since I did promise that I would do that. Here he comes.
Hello there. Robert Garnham here, performance poet, professor of whimsy. So where am I now? I hear you wonder. Well, I am on Paynton's Pier, and I thought I'd find the ideal place to come and do a poem. As you can hear, though, it's a bit noisy. But that's okay, because I like a bit of background character. This machine over here is somewhat noisy. There's one there with a penguin in it, a stuffed penguin that you can grab with a hand grabber. You can win a octopus. You can win a Tweety Pie. Or you can win a bank bag with a pound coin in it. So over here we've got Jungle Blaster, where you can squirt water into a hole. I'm not sure what you can win there. Now I'm standing next to the fiberglass Chewbacca, looking out across the sea. It is stirringly beautiful. So anyway, here's my poem. Doesn't have a title yet. It's just called Poem. I've never been to Orkney, though I'd love to go there. I've never been to Orkney. I hear there's lots of snow there. I've never been to Orkney, where there's magic in the air. I've never been to Orkney and felt the wind in my hair. I've never been to Orkney, though I hear there's frequent flights. So I could easily go up there and have tea with the Orkneyites. And they would say, get me the hell off Orkney. There's nothing at all up here. Just seals and limpets and barnacles, and the shops are all too dear. Get me the hell off Orkney. I'm fed up with basking sharks and seals and limpets and barnacles, and it's always dark. And if you work in a cafe like me and you're really sick of it, you have to go to Aberdeen to get your food hygiene certificate. So there we go. A little slice of life there.
So a little bit of slice of life with Mr. Robert Garnham. I'm sorry about those jingles that keep happening. I think that's our phone, actually. Let's have a little bit of the jingle.
Just wandering around.
Oh, that's not the jingle, is it? Let's have a little bit of our own sound art jingle.
Looking at the...
No, we can't get it. It's true, we cannot get our sound art jingle. It's all right. Everyone's used to me doing the technical on the Word Cafe. Instead, we shall have something else. This will bring us up to the Bard of Northampton. Yes, it's true. It's amazing how you contact these poets around UK and the world, in fact. Just flagging up there saying, oh, you couldn't come on our programme, could you? And absolutely, like a goddess, she appeared. So we're going to give her a ring now and see what is going on. I know she has a very busy life, the Bard of Northampton. Let's get her on the phone. Isabel Ambler. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Hello there.
Hello.
Welcome to 102.5 FM Sound Art Radio. I was just saying, my goodness, like a goddess, you have flown in, the Bard of Northampton. Wow. And I know you're incredibly busy, but tell us out there in sort of community radio land, the Word Cafe land, what you are up to at the moment in terms of poetry, how you're running your life in the pandemic, and how it's all going, really.
Well, I've been freelance for about 6 years, and so obviously when lockdown came, my Weaving Words creative writing workshops suddenly all ended up on Zoom.
Yeah.
And it was actually a beautiful spiritual place for people just to, you know, let their pen become that tool for life as such, you know. Mm. They expressed, they laughed, they cried, and it was a safe space and it was beautiful. So my creative writing workshops have gone from strength to strength because Brilliant. People needed that space to express and heal and laugh and play with words, you know. And so this afternoon I'll be going into a mental health ward and I'll be doing a weaving words group there. So I do some work. Just, I'm passionate about helping others to express and write. I love writing myself and it's helped me through all sorts of things, a breakdown, a divorce and all sorts of things. Mm. And that's why my latest book is Permission to Speak, because I've found my voice and I want to help others find theirs.
That's brilliant, Isabel. Thank you. Wow, that sounds so focused and so kind of generous spirited as well. Let's hear some of your poetry, because I am a stranger to your words, so I'm really excited about this.
Well, I have naughty poetry. Ooh. Where, you know, often I'm introduced as mistress of mischief and wordsmith wench, but I also have very deep poetry, so we'll break you in gently with a new
please.
One.
Break me gently.
This was during lockdown when I literally wanted to hug and hold and I couldn't. So this poem is called Emergency Muse. Let me wrap my words around you, soothe with syllables and TLC. Hold you safely in my prose to heal today's life malady. Where blunt, harsh, internal knocks leave an eternal bruise, let me ease the bully's disease. Let me be your rescue muse. Let's soak hurting tears and fears in calming psalms, a devotional potion bathed daily, a cleansing stanza balm. Restful rhymes are immunity remedies, help alleviate persistent anxieties. Lullaby stitches applied carefully to love lines torn apart. Turn time's pages with soft phrases to mend a broken heart. Sleepless nights and bad dreams need a boost-filled prescription, playfully put right with a comedic injection. Calamities need anti-inflammatories to help all ills from getting worse. Ingested on a regular basis, take a tonic via verse. Sonnet-powered plasters applied with poised hands at the ready. Dulcet tones deliver poetic tomes to keep life's balance steady. Prayerful pen in hand, no promise of heroics. Clause is formulated to serve. I'm your emergency poet.
Wow.
There you go.
I closed my eyes on that one. Thank you. I got a lot from that. That was wonderful. Thanks so much.
Just and before that you... wanting to hold.
Oh God, yes.
And hold.
Yes.
And all I could do was wrap my words around my family and my friends and my word weavers. And that's all I could do.
Well, as Tracy said, you know, from the get-go of this program, you know, that words transform, and it's true.
Yes.
I mean, someone else said to me years ago, a chap from San Francisco, words are bullets, and it's true. They can be healing and they can be bullets. But, you know, for me, poetry really does change the way I feel and think and operate, and it that was so calming. Thank you for that. Can I just ask you before you do the a naughty poem?
Would you like a naughty poem?
Oh, definitely. But before I get you to do
in that,
case,
I need to share with you one of my favourite poems. And I wrote it in the spring when all the adverts were saying that we had to be smooth and, you know, razor this and shave off that and all the rest of it. So I wrote this poem called Retro Afro Muff. To depilate or not to depilate, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the stings and narrows of outrageous pubic misfortune, or take underarms, legs and mound against a sea of troubled peer pressure. Millions of pounds spent in chemist aisles to make a suitable impression. Cultural traditions, fashions, adverts from the media obsession. to follow the trends of shaven and shorn, to wax her thatch and match the look led by porn. Tweezers pluck, contraptions remove, lady razors, creams and waxy strips. How strange this prepubescent look is required for her feminine genital bits. Slippy, slidey, pink temptress, smooth runway strip. The next day, itchy, scratchy, stubbly Velcro grip. Oh, neatly trimmed and coiffured, natural woman in the buff. Topiary garden, healthy protection, embracing her retro afro muff.
You've made me all gone all funny. Oh, God. Look, even the drums are playing. It's been a long time since I have heard a racy poem like that performed. So you've done me the... That was like a tonic. I know Tracy, if she's still listening, she will have loved that poem. That's definitely...
Actually, I performed that one for Live Talk when they did the WOMAD trials just before lockdown. I came second, as it happens, and she loved it. That's
brilliant. See, that's what I love about poetry, because so many people are frightened of poetry because they think, oh, it's just all Shakespeare and, you know, intellectual stuff. But it really isn't, you know... Everything is, all people's words are different, aren't they? Just,
yes.
You talked about the writing courses that you run. I mean, you'll know that completely, that the people on your course are going to come up with all sorts of different, and very accessible,
yes.
Actually.
Yeah, they empty the heads onto the page. I literally say, get that tin opener and let's just spill it into that stream of consciousness.
That's
we
brilliant.
We all start with that, you know. Before we have prompts and different music and smells and things we touch. And we have fabulous fun, you know. But it is about being real, I think. It's about being real.
Yeah, most definitely. And perhaps getting over, because I know that when I was sort of at school and, you know, we had to study Shakespeare, it was a very different experience to studying Shakespeare when I went to drama school. It was so different. Suddenly there were teachers that were sort of experts and could make everyone sort of feel at ease and understand it. So it is actually sometimes just down to having the right teacher as well, and taking that sort of demystifying the whole thing about poetry. Now, I don't want to burble on. I want to get another poem from you. Go on.
Okay. I'm not sure which one to share with you now.
Something emotional. Or whatever you want to, honestly.
This is one that I performed when I was went for the Bard of Northampton.
Oh, yeah.
And I was aware that I've got a year and a day to work with the people of Northamptonshire. And I was thinking there's a lot of healing needs to be going on, and we need that love to glue together communities. And so I wrote a poem. This is one that I wrote as part of the Bardic Trials. And it's called Kintsugi Love Repairs. And I don't know if you know about the Japanese kintsugi, where broken pots are mended with glue or lacquer, but they sprinkle the gold or platinum or silver in the lacquer to really make a feature of that break or that tear.
Amazing.
Or that incomplete. Yeah. So this is called Kintsugi Love Repairs. Different dialects, languages and accents, vocal cords with a local twang, diverse community around me as I work out who I am, disagreements, verbal battles, social media injuries. Do they win the divisionary war? They're just short-term victories. Combative voices, past and present snipe, scissored words have us flawed. Pick up the shattered pieces. Let's pull together. Take time to mend and pause. Kintsugi means join cracks and seams. The flaws, imperfections, claim as ours. Broken, now stronger, glistening gold repairs. Embrace the art of precious scars. Listen to your inner voice, your gut instinct, God instinct, true. Affirm and choose your peers wisely. Life's finest glue is simply love and self-value.
Wow, that was absolutely brilliant. And I was going to ask you a little bit about the Bard, but we've run out of time, Bard of Northampton.
Oh, no.
Yes, we have. But I just want to say to you, you must come on again, and I'd love to hear more about the work you do online and obviously, the other work you're doing. It just sounds like you're really out there and putting spoken word in its place, is what I'd like to say. I really enjoyed your words.
I think the lockdown made us sort of try all sorts of different things, film and audio, and it's
exactly
sort of, all sorts of new ways of expressing. Yeah.
So thank you so much, Bard of Northampton, Casabel Ambler. Thank you very much for being with us today on the Word Cafe. Take care.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.
Brilliant. So we've come to the end of our show, The Word Cafe. It's every week at 12 o'clock on 102.5 FM. I know that last week I didn't flag up Susan Jordan's... right, so basically, if you want to buy the book from last week, you can either buy it from the Maytree Press, that's The Last of the Line, written by Susan Jordan, or you can contact her on the Facebook page, Susan Jordan Poetry and Writing. So there you go, done that bit. But just leads me to thank everyone that made this programme possible. To Martin Seeger, thank you so much for all the help that you give. And the fantastic song, The Word Cafe, thank you so much. To Tracy Gillies for settling me and centering me and being part of this whole lockdown process, poetry process, the lockdown podcast. And as I say, you can find them on Spotify and also on Podbean. We put all our programmes out on Podbean. And obviously, I'm going to thank that little twirl. Did you hear it? I don't know what that's about. But anyway, thank you for being on the show. I'd like to thank Live Talk and Chris Redmond and Matt Harvey for that Fantasimondo poetry podcast lockdown. It was great. To Simon Williams, thank you. Thank you so much for being our book launch poet today. And also to Tim Scott, to Robert Garnham, and the Bard of Northampton. Thank you so much, all of you, for being on the show. We've squeezed you all in. Oh, my giddy auntie. And now it's time for lunch. Okay, so let's play a little bit of something, shall we? Let's just carry on with that music I started off with, which is Filma Solo by Gabriel Olaf. Ciao.